I'm going to talk even faster than Samantha. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody from both of us. My name is Thomas Dunning. I'm the principal social worker with TUSS, the Child and Family Agency's Team for Separated Children. I've been with the team for since 2006, and I just want to go over a few bits of, fortunately, Emma covered quite a bit of my presentation, so this should just fly by. Skipping this whole page, going to that. I thought it would be really useful to understand that I'm going to be talking about practice rather than policy, and that because sometimes people don't really understand what are these social workers, why are they there, why are they causing problems. So in the context of children who are seeking asylum or unaccompanied minors who are not seeking asylum, this international definition of social work, one of many that you can find anywhere on the internet, describes a bit about who we are and what we do. And I think that the two pieces in here that are really important for me is the where we interact with children and their environments. So a separated child arrives in Ireland, and that is overwhelming for a 13, 14, 15-year-old with no language, and we're really funny people, and they don't understand what's going on. We're there to hold them and to carry them through that experience. And then also the principles of human rights and social justice, which are fundamental to our work. At the bottom, there's some different areas where social workers work. Ethics and core functions of social work practice, these are just a few of many, many international codes of ethics and core functions. Advocacy, confidentiality, clients' right to self-determination. This is not just for adults who have social work services. This is for children as well. Bearing in mind our responsibility in local parentis to be responsible for them as in the role of a prudent parent, if you will, in the absence of their parental the parents here, we do have to take on board, and it's actually kind of in our statutory care planning for children in Ireland, that the wishes of the children must be listened to and acknowledged, even if the decision goes against that, we must engage them in the process. And their right to self-determination is something that we hold very important as one of their rights. Non-judgmental regard, non-oppressive practice, this is really useful for us. We struggle with this sometimes because the issue of trust comes up for unaccompanied minors. And as we heard earlier today, children not wanting to tell their full story. And we have to provide them with a holistic service, regardless of the fact that they might be not as trusting of us as we would like them to be or as open with us. And so these are some core ethics and core functions that we deal with. Okay, we've covered legislation, so I'm going to skip that. Here's the good part of the presentation. History of Service Development in Ireland, 1996, first separated child arrives. We go jump over to 2000, crisis. 520 referrals hit the country. If you can just imagine, an additional 520 Irish children coming into care this year. And then the next year, over 1,000 additional Irish children coming into care. Yeah, we had kids in sleeping bags in church halls, because that's what we had, because we didn't have even buildings at that time for this. We did the best we could, but it was a really difficult situation for Ireland. And through the will of the people in Ireland, the will of the NGOs working with the asylum-seeking community, the will of the politicians and the social work services, in 2009 and 2010, the equity of care principle came into play. We heard about it earlier today. And what that did was it eradicated the two-tiered system of children in care in the state of Ireland. So that two-tiered system now is one where Irish children and separated children seeking asylum or separated children are on the same footing. So any Irish child and any separated child in Ireland is going to have the same standard of care. They will be in a foster placement. They will be in a residential home that's monitored, inspected, regulated, and standardized. And all of that stuff is now in place. Statutory care plans that are up to date, reviews of those plans, leaving and aftercare plans, all of these things are in place that were not able to be in place back then because actually we didn't even have the social workers to meet such large numbers. So I just wanted to point that out because to me that's really exciting. One of the things that's very exciting also in our work is that even Sweden right now who are hitting almost 5,000 for this year, for 2014, even Sweden is saying to Ireland, we don't have the resources. Of course, I don't have 5,000 children in care, thank God. I have, at the moment, we have about 60 separated children in care. So I can actually be really creative in making sure that the resources I have are able to maintain this. But even Sweden, with their 5,000 separated children this year, are saying to Ireland, we're considering what you guys are doing. We're looking at that. And we want to see what we can do. We can't do everything you're doing. That's really something that's amazing, and I'm really proud of. I think Ireland should be really proud of that, and everyone who's involved in the separated children community in Ireland. So the team now, we had at our peak, we had 32 clinical staff. The numbers have dropped, as you saw in the previous presentation, so now we have a much smaller team of 12 clinicians, aftercare project workers, social work team leaders, and myself, the principal. We have one interesting piece here is that we have a very ethnically diverse team in our service right now. Ireland, Ethiopia, Canada, Zimbabwe, India, Australia, Nigeria, South Africa, and the USA are all of the people that work on the team as clinicians. Historically, we've had people from all over the world as well, and I think that's a wonderful resource that we have in our team's expertise. The last person to join our team came on 7 years ago. So everyone who's been in the team has a built-up expertise around asylum issues for separated children, and I'm really happy about that. And we have, of course, multiple languages spoken in the office, which helps when a young child comes in and speaks French or Spanish. We have people on the team who can respond to that. You heard earlier where our referrals come from. In 2012, we had 71, went up in 2013, and to date, as of yesterday, we had 86 referrals this year. Interesting to note, this year we've had over 83% of our referrals have come into care. Historically, it's been a 50-50 balance between our family reunification service stream and our unaccompanied minors coming into care service stream. And now, this year, 83% of children who have been referred to the service are being brought into care. And that's a big difference. Also this year, our big cohorts of children that have been referred to us are Albanian boys, boys and girls from Congo, and also we've had Zimbabwe has been a big, these are big groups for us this year. Compared to peak years, the earlier years of our big numbers. So we're managing now, by the skin of our teeth, but we're getting through. Just so for people who like statistics, there's some old numbers in there of referrals to the team, children placed in care, and then family reunifications. And I'm sorry, the last two squares down at the bottom haven't been completed yet because I'm still getting that together. This is all in the presentation, which will be available on the website. I'm only giving half of the presentation today because, oh great, I've got 5 minutes. I can do a lot in 5 minutes. This is a half an hour presentation and I only have 10 minutes. So there's at the end of the presentation, there's some discussion around challenges and solutions of working with the immigration authorities regarding age assessment and accommodation and things like that. So feel free to take a look at that if you're interested in that. I mentioned earlier that we're in loco parentis, and I guess that we approach our work from a concept that if this child's parents were here, what would they be doing for this child? And that's kind of our approach. So we really try to focus on the needs of the child and what are their educational needs, what are their health needs. The asylum piece is one dimension of their life. And for us, I have a lot of conversations with colleagues across Europe who say, why aren't they in the asylum process the minute they come in the door? Well, because I have to do a needs assessment. And with a child who's withholding a bit of information, I actually need to know if that's the best interest determination I'm going to be making. And so fortunately, the INIS and the GNIB and OREC and even Angarda Síochána all work with our team to make sure that these kids are held in the most healthy and robust way that they can. So there's just some information about some of our responsibilities and how we deal with it. I don't think there's anything I need to go into in there that's not already been discussed. So some principles of our service, welfare of the child is paramount. And for us, one of the things we say in our office is, those aren't just words. We can't just be saying the best interest is paramount. So, if somebody wants to attack my service or one of my decisions I'm making, that's fair enough. I'll hear your critique, but at the end of the day, I've got clinical responsibility for that, the safety of that child, and if that means I'm going to do something outside of the box to make sure that they're safe, then we're going to do that. Because what we have found with separated children is that they each are so unique I can have 16 boys from Albania right now in care, and each one of them has their own story, their own journey, their own life experiences, and their own protection needs, even if they don't even know what those are yet. And I have to individually, we have to, as a team, respond individually to that young person's situation. So we really do try to do that. Family tracing is a big part of the work that we do. When I mentioned the residential units that we use as intake units, we have four intake units. We have three intake units with six beds each, just like any residential unit. We see these residential units as pre-family tracing, pre-family reunification, or pre-foster placement, short-term intake units. So they're not in hostels, they're not in reception centers. These are just standardized children's residential homes, and they're short to medium term, so about 3 to 6 months while we do the best quality matching we can do. If we need to transfer a child to a foster family down the country, the local social work team where that child will go may receive a transfer of that case, and they accept that transfer from us. So these are kind of just some more, wow, you know what, I'm actually at the last slide of what I said I was going to talk about, but while I'm here, I'm going to just go ahead and hijack a minute or two. So just to, some things that you'll find in the back of the presentation there. A little bit of history about the accommodation dilemmas and where we're at now. I wanted to mention something about the missing children piece, and I've got it on a slide in here. So yeah, here's aging out, issues with age, asylum process. And these are some solutions that we offer for how we try to work for the kids with our partners, developing quality relationships with local children rights, NGOs, and government agencies. And all of these are good stuff. Building bridges between the adult asylum seeker accommodation services and ourselves so that the transition process is as manageable as possible. One of the things that we're really big on is that, you know, not every separated child is a refugee child. That's cool. That's okay. They don't have to be. They're a child, and you have to see them as a child. And as I said earlier, the asylum piece is one dimension of that child's life experience. And we really need to make sure that, you know, they have a little brother they want to talk about. They don't really want to talk about the interview. They don't really want, you know, they want to talk about, you know, their friends that they're missing from back home. And so you need to hear some of those things. I just want to mention here, in Ireland, we've developed some protocols with the police service here, which is An Garda Síochána, and the GNIB. And our missing children rate has dropped incredibly. We've had one child go missing this year so far. That's been considered a significant missing person. Looking at the... in 2001, we had 9.6%. 81 children went missing in 2001. So things are really improving, and I'm really happy about that, because one of the questions that somebody asked earlier was about what would be better, what's a better option maybe for children, separated children, aside from foster care or a children's residential home. And the other option is detention. And we don't want children in detention. That doesn't meet their needs. So our children, we do have absence management plans for children who come into our intake unit. And how am I doing? Yeah, I'm done. All right. So I'll just say we have an absence management plan. So when a child comes into one of our reception centers, not a reception center, one of our residential units, that we put a plan in place to make sure that they don't go out on their own for a few days, and we mind them very well. And then they don't go missing in those first few days, and that's really good. Okay, so I'm done, and all of that stuff is there, blah, 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 blah.